Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back, Richard. I am so excited because we get to do another interview today, and our interview today is with someone from here in the States.
That's right. So we don't have a 15-hour difference.
That's right.
Between different days, you know, as we did when that's we right. talked to folks in New Zealand and Australia.
There's an easy 1 hour difference in our time zones. So we're welcoming Ms. Alla Abdin with us today for this conversation on narcissism.
Right. I am so excited about this interview because frequently we discuss these topics with researchers mm-hmm. or people who are doing, you know, research in these areas, and they have degrees and they've been practicing. Alla, by contrast, is I want to get this right, Alla. You're a thinker, a writer, a philosopher, and a historian, right?
Right.
So this is a personal issue for you, and I'm really excited about this because this morning we're going to talk about a fairly technical topic.
Yeah.
Narcissism and personality and that sort of stuff, but from a life perspective rather than from a diagnostic perspective, perhaps. So I'm really excited about this conversation. Alla lives in Texas. We're not going to hold that against her. Because she's
you're already drawing lines.
She's very
already.
No, we don't. No, she lives in Southeast Texas. For those of you who are a little thin in geography, that's near Houston, along the Gulf Coast of Texas. She originally studied medicine.
Yeah,
which is near and dear to our hearts because we have a medical backgrounds. Both of us have worked in medical schools and psychiatry. So that was fascinating to us that she had a medical background, but after spending 3 years studying it, decided that she would rather study psychology.
Yeah.
That was her passion.
Yeah.
But she has written, widely and deeply. We've read some of her things, and I have to say they're, interesting reads. So we're very happy to have her. She, studied in Egypt, but has returned to the United States and, is thinking seriously about the formal study of psychology. So, Alla, it's really good to have you here. This is going to be an exciting time.
Yeah,
it's good to be here. Thank you.
Great. And you know, to kind of piggyback off of that just a little bit, you know, Alla, one of the reasons that we started this podcast and we started some of the work that we do is because of this very thing right here, and that is to, you know, so often we hear about some of these things from professionals, and they talk about things in technical terms and in, you know, sort of jargon that is very remote to most people. And so it's fantastic. We're so excited to be
right.
to be talking to someone about a, like you said, a technical topic,
right?
But from a real life perspective and real world perspective.
And the other thing, when I read your writings, it's a passionate perspective,
right?
You know, there's deep feeling here, and so that's what has me excited about it, because I know that this is an important topic for you and a topic about which you have some passion. If you gave up a medical career, you have some passion, so. Right. Good to talk to you about it.
Well, thank you, guys. It's really great to be here. It's awesome to be able to actually relay about narcissism from, like how you guys put it, into a more like from a life perspective. And not so much. And probably, hopefully, that people that listening to the podcast or watching the vlog, that they will actually relate and get a more of a understanding from also a technical perspective, from your perspective as well.
Right, right,
right.
Now, Alla, we talked earlier about this whole business of narcissism, and you said that when you first encountered it, it was sort of an odd personality trait, but as you began to learn more about it, you discovered that it was a much more serious problem.
Right.
Tell me about that.
Well, First, you know, when you meet people, you kind of sort of build the word I'm looking for, first impressions. And the people that I have met, their first impressions were they were very charming, very genuine at first. They have that strong presence of their personality, and they make you feel like you are the only person in the room when they're talking with you. And then after knowing them deeply, interacting with them, talking with them, and knowing them on a very personal level, you find that there is something not right. There is something not clicking here. They're not what you know they have given or you know shown in their first you know the first impression.
Yeah, absolutely. And we did a series a couple of weeks ago on the Big Five, the sci-fi, the five major personality traits. And I think that what you're talking about is a really interesting perspective, because one of the things we mentioned when we were doing those podcasts was that a lot of this is, variations in normality. And as we're getting into some of these issues related to narcissism and all, we can very easily and quickly get into get outside of the range of normality, because as you were describing, we're talking oftentimes about people who seem to be very extroverted, people who are very engaging, people who seem or are apparently very conscientious about how other people feel, and so they're responding to that, and they create this flow in the conversation to make it seem like they're very very interested in you. And then that changes with a little bit of time, and it's fascinating.
Right, it is. It is. It's sort of like having a I guess in a sense I approach it from the perspective of like we're all different personalities. Our personalities are unique to our person. And what we present to the world perhaps is not the same what we have around family or in our homes. So with them is sort of having a kind of a mask that you can't actually see who they are on the inside until you get to know them. And that's really kind of dangerous in a sense that you don't know who they are. I find it that very, very troubling, really.
Ella, you talk about the two important features of narcissism are, one is the narcissist himself, but the other is the role that they make the other person play in their lives. They have to have hosts. It's almost as though a narcissist has to have a host to feed on,
They can't
because
exist in isolation.
no, they have to have somebody else, and so they select these people. As you say, you meet them initially and they light up the room, they light up your life, and they make you feel important, but it's really just a ruse to bring you into their life so that they can feed off you, and they actually destroy the host. And so talk about that. It's the narcissist, but the narcissist needs other people.
They actually it seems like they are if we think of the fictional character of a vampire
Oh, good.
they have to have they have to feed and off of people and usually they will have host or somebody that will actually give them what they need. So their existence, their sort of their whole existence it was relying on somebody else instead of like I guess for normal people you get your energy not energy but you get your sense of self from the environment excuse me and probably also and also from inside yourself. With narcissists they lack this thing. They don't have that perhaps we can call it self-reflection. And so their need to get it from other people, like they build their sense self from others around them rather than actually getting it from their inner selves, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, I like the vampire analogy. That's really, I hadn't thought of it until you mentioned it, but that's a perfect analogy. They have to feed on others, and they destroy others in the process.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They take the life out of, sometimes quite literally, they take right. the life of the other person. It's some of the stories you read about true narcissists. Mm-hmm. I mean, they will kill the other person if the other person tries to move away,
right.
separate from the narcissist. So.
And it's insidious. It's
an insidious relationship,
right? Mm-hmm. Right. It's unbelievable. The it's not just the mental breakdown of the other person. It's also can physical illness can actually mm-hmm. also manifest as well.
Yeah, because you slowly get drawn into their world,
right.
And that's a very sick world
yes,
that you're entering.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And some of the experts say that in order to survive, you almost have to become mentally ill.
Right.
In order to live that life.
Right.
You become fragmented
mm-hmm.
yourself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, let's do a little bit of foundational work, really, real quick. A couple of weeks ago, we did a podcast on the history of personality theory. And we talked about, you know, where a lot of this, where a lot of our personality is derived from. We talked about temperament, and we talked about, you know, our experiences and things like that. And I think that, you know, something that's important to point out is that what we're talking about with narcissism, right, is very different than confidence, than even, it's really even different than arrogance. What we're talking about mm-hmm. With narcissism is really a fundamental perspective of value. It's not that I'm really good, you know, that's confidence. It's not that I'm better than everybody else, that's arrogance. It's that I'm more important. It's I'm more, you know, what I'm superior to others. And I think that there's these different layers of confidence in sort of that similar attribute that differentiates, you know, confidence from arrogance from narcissism. Yeah. You're thinking very hard.
I was watching it. There's a fellow who is a narcissist, self-proclaimed narcissist, and he does videos.
Uh-huh.
And I think the distinction is that the narcissist doesn't care what other people think.
Right.
And he says that. He said, it's not that, but I don't care what you think. It doesn't mm-hmm, matter mm-hmm. to me. So there's this lack of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can be confident and still care about others. You can be arrogant and still think about others.
Right.
A narcissist mm-hmm. has no regard for the other.
Right.
Right. And that's the dangerous part, is they have no regard. The other person exists solely to feed them.
Right.
Right. Right. Yes. Yes, absolutely. And they're like you said, their lack of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the hallmark of being human,
right.
That you connect with other people through that, and they don't have it, or I really don't know if they really don't have it or they have it off. It's something I would love to know.
Yeah, that is a defining characteristic, I think, of the narcissist.
Right.
Don't you agree? It's this lack of empathy that they simply don't care. They use the other person. They
right.
simply don't care about the other person. The other person yes. exists for me.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's the pathology.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there's, when we're talking about, again, I think it's, there's some varying degrees, because we have a condition called narcissistic personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's a level of narcissism that creates dysfunction. But we also have narcissism that exists within the functional world, right? We have people who would certainly qualify, perhaps this person that you're talking about that does the videos, that would qualify as being narcissistic, even if it's just self-proclaimed. but function relatively well. You know, they are able to get work done. They're able to be successful. They're able to, you know, manage the world around them in a way that leads to some form of success.
Right. You're talking, that's the CEO type.
Right. Right.
Now, you talk about the CEO, do you, Ella?
Yes.
The CEO type?
Right. Well,
we're getting there, but we're going to go slowly. Okay.
Well, wow. The CEO type, these people, I think they, especially if they start from humble beginnings, they probably, as they grow and they grow their business and their connections, they may start actually showing, they become arrogant, self-centered, and it's their way or the highway, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know if, I mean, it's sort of kind of like, it's perhaps their environment, they need to be like that. They need to be showing that they are able to do the job,
mm-hmm.
Which is really like, you know, when it comes to CEOs, they're really brutal.
But with the CEO, there's this theory in neurobiology that as your status in the group rises, your testosterone levels rise. And it's true for men and women.
Right.
That as your status in the group rises, your testosterone levels rise. So that would give you confidence, assertiveness, maybe even arrogance. But again, we're still not talking about a narcissist. We're talking about somebody who might be supremely confident, might be very assertive to the point of being aggressive, okay?
Right.
But we're not yet talking about a narcissist.
Right.
Right?
Right. 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 They have to show, I mean, it's a fine line, actually, I think, between...
Sure, because...
Yes.
No, because we have in our country this Tesla automobile, the electric car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He has... There's no patent.
Right.
He's made that, and he's a successful executive. Right. He has made that available to any other car manufacturer who wants to use that engine.
Right.
It's a specially designed engine. So he may be assertive and confident, but he's not a narcissist.
Right.
Whereas other CEOs move into narcissism.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it has to do with what the person is, to some extent, it has to do with what the person is willing to do to get to the status. You know, some people, like you think about, you know, people who, you know, some of our early technology innovators, these guys worked in garages, they just did all kinds of things, but it was all, you know, they didn't take advantage of other people, they didn't use other people to climb any ladder, they built it all on their own, sort of like Tesla. Whereas the people who tend to be CEOs that are sort of in that narcissistic realm, they seek that success as a defining attribute of themselves. They are the company. They are themselves. They are the success. It's not. They don't exist outside of the success.
That's the kind of executive, the CEO, who would put his name on an airplane.
Right.
Or on a hotel.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's me. It's me. It's not my company.
Right.
It's me. I am the company.
An example I think that everybody could relate to is Tony Stark from the Avengers. He had, you know, he had the Stark Tower. He had, you know, his name was on everything, and that is that's a narcissist. But you know, he probably didn't have narcissistic personality disorder.
Why not?
Because he was generally functioning. He was able to in some extent to interact with other people and. He certainly changed as the comic book stories go.
Do you know what he's talking about?
I hope so.
Yes,
Do you know Tony Stark?
Yeah, Avengers.
He doesn't.
You guys lost me. And she said, Alice, oh yeah, that's Tony Stark. And I thought, who's Tony Stark? I'm running through my Rolodex wondering where Tony Stark is.
Iron Man.
He's not in my Rolodex.
Right? Iron Mask, right. Iron okay. Man. Iron
this
Man.
Happens,
yeah.
This happens frequently on this program. I have a question for Al. I have a question for you. You're interested in psychology. You know about psychological disorders create impairment. Is the narcissist impaired?
That's a good question.
I'm sorry.
I don't know the answer to
that. No. Your voice.
Is the narcissist impaired?
Impaired? I don't think so, really. I have.
Because in order to make a diagnosis, we have to have impairment.
It's true. It's true. Now, I have read the DSM-5 manual. I mean, how they define personality disorders, and the mentioning of the impairment of personality functioning, and so that kind of made me think of the people, the individuals that I have met and I interacted with. They don't have an impairment. It's more into their character, which makes me think that some of the traits that in the DSM is listed, not all narcissists have these traits. They have other traits that can actually qualify them also as narcissists.
Right.
So as far as being impaired, I don't really believe that. But that's my personal opinion based on what I have seen.
I hadn't thought about it before, but discussing with you, it made me think that the narcissist may make life difficult for others.
Right.
The narcissist himself isn't suffering from any significant impairment.
Right. Well, you know, but a lot of times when it comes to defining impairment, we're talking about in any area of life. And so, you know, certainly one could argue that there's an impairment in social functioning,
right,
maybe not in any other way. And as you said, you know, there's a whole phenomenon of when a person has certain personality traits, they're not cognizantly aware that they have those personality traits. You know, if the person that's depressed, they can identify the depressive symptoms. The person who's narcissistic, this is just the way they think. And so they, like you said, may not recognize that they have an impairment or see any limitations at all. But to others, you can see that limitation and social interactions, that difficulty maintaining relationships and that kind of thing.
Yeah, they're not able to see. I mean, that's the problem with narcissism. If there's a problem, it has to exist outside. It can't exist inside me.
Right.
You know. So, but that's an interesting differentiation.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about it before. So.
Yeah, Alan made a great point. It's something that we're gonna do a series of on personality disorders that we're gonna put on our other YouTube channel. But and where we're gonna really walk through each personality disorder type and talk about it and everything. But you know, Al, you mentioned something that's huge, and that is the idea that when we think about personality disorders, so often we think about them as silos. You know, okay, that person has narcissistic personality disorder, or this person has antisocial personality disorder, when in reality, there is a significant overlap in symptoms and symptom presentations that could have a person with symptoms of narcissism, but also symptoms of antisocial and also symptoms of dependent personality disorder. They could have traits for many different conditions or different identifiers. So that's a great point. You know, as we've been talking about it, and you mentioned the CEO type, and Al, I'm not sure if you've had some experience with this before, but there was a paper that was written not too long ago. And they were talking about the two types of narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is the that overly, it is that traditional classic type of narcissist. But it also talked about the vulnerable narcissist,
mm-hmm,
and how You know, there are those narcissists whose ego is so weak. You have the narcissists who have that classically strong ego. Right. You know, they're the most important person ever to exist. But then you have that vulnerable, weak ego narcissist that presents very differently. You know,
that's the type that I have actually encountered. The okay. ones, the vulnerable type, not the like in your face kind of type.
Right.
The one that is truly like they you know, they say hiding behind a mask. And this type is actually I think is more destructive towards people around them.
The vulnerable.
Because
the vulnerable.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. It's more destructive because you don't know where they're at in any given point. You don't know what to expect from the time you meet them, and then you don't know how your day is going to be with them.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that type, the vulnerable. Some I read that they also say overt and covert.
Mm, that's true. Narcissism. That's another way to differentiate.
Yeah.
It's really the vulnerable type is really interesting to me because there are certainly those narcissistic traits, but as you said, it's sort of a mask that they use to mm-hmm. cover up their deficits and their perceived at least weaknesses, and many times. The mask isn't overkill. They kind of go overboard with things, and it's that's the part I think that you're meaning that's unpredictable. Yes. and sort of concerning because you don't know what to expect.
Right. They're the methods. It's all with them with that type that I have encountered. The methods that they use, they're so subtle. There's subtlety in everything that they do. The way they talk to you, the way they hint to stuff, the way that you may, like for example, you've had a great day, and they will find a way to actually make it miserable in a subtle way that you don't really realize until like you are not in their presence and you're like, okay, what happened? What was said? Why it was said like that? So yeah, they kind of, I guess what I'm trying to say is that they play with your own reality as well. The way how, because their reality I think is very distorted. So
yeah,
kind of.
That's what the experts say about, I mean, people who specialize in narcissism and narcissistic personality disorders, that's what they say, that the view of reality, the narcissist's view of reality is so distorted, and they have to bring others into that reality.
Yeah.
And bringing you into that reality is destructive. That's what's destructive of the other person.
Yeah,
because in order to survive in that world, you get brought into that world. They interviewed a woman who apparently had lived, I think she had lived with or been in a relationship with a narcissist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it took her quite a long time, quite a lot of therapy
mm-hmm.
to be able to extract herself and rediscover who she was, because she was really destroyed by the experience.
Yeah.
I was surprised.
I bet. And what I think is, you know, if we're going to label anything about it as anything else about it as scary, you know,
right.
what's concerning is that many times it's, again, things that they do that I don't know that they're really cognizant that they're doing it. I don't think that they're saying, man, she's in too good of a mood. I'm going to see how I can take that away from her. Instead, they're, you know, it's sort of a automatic response that they have. I wouldn't say it's conditioned, because that implies that it's sort of a behaviorist type of perspective, but it's certainly something that they just seem to innately do. It's just, let me see how I can.
Well, and also the only reason you can be in a good mood is because of me.
Right.
If you're in a good mood for any other reason, then I have to take that away from you
mm-hmm.
because I'm the only reason that you can be in a good mood.
I
think that's what's at work here. Do you agree, Al?
Yes. One thing Dr. Bernie said that about them, that perhaps maybe they're not doing it really on purpose or purposefully, but I'm not quite sure about that point right there, because it seems that there are times that they are fully aware of what they are doing, but it could be different from person to person, from narcissist to narcissist, depending on how much they are, you know, how deeply narcissistic they are.
Sure. No, no, absolutely. But I think that the challenge is, like, I think about, you know, I have a number of people that I work with who go through or have lived through periods where either guys or girls who, like, if a friend is dating someone, they will sort of intentionally go and try to mess up that relationship so that that person will find them attractive or come to them or something like that. And they absolutely know that they're intentionally doing that. The issue is that they don't know why. They don't know it's because of that they're narcissistic or because of their own personal needs. It's just that they do it with intention, but they don't know the root of why they do it.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, I agree to that. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. They, it's like saying, you know, mentioning that their reality is distorted. So right. To them, that might seem normal, actually, mm-hmm. but to the rest of us, it's not.
Right, right. Yeah, that vulnerable, weak ego can't tolerate someone else being happy for, right. like you said, for That's whatever right. reason. And so they know there's some intention to go and change that. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's what makes it so challenging to work with people who are like that or have those traits, because we don't know the why. And because they right. don't know the why, they can't really appreciate enough to change some of those cognitive distortions and perceived thinkings.
Well, and also a narcissist wouldn't enter our office.
That's true. You know, that's
true. They're not going to come here because there's nothing wrong.
Well, the ones that do, right. they come in and they tell us how we should do the therapy that's with them.
Right. That's tell us what we need to do to change our lives and become better.
My favorite was I had a guy come in one time. He goes, "You just tell me that I need to go ahead and that I need to make some goals, and then I'll do that." Okay, well, go make some goals. He goes, okay, I'll do that. Thank you. And it's like, why did it work like that? Why don't you just go make goals if that's what you need to do?
Right. So tell me what to do.
That's right. But only tell me what to do when I tell you what to tell me to do.
That's right. But I'll tell you when to tell me. It's because I have to be in charge.
It's so confusing.
Right.
So,
well, Freud said that the narcissist was the only person that he couldn't help.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So it goes back to all the way back. And Freud told us that
yeah.
because there's nothing wrong. The narcissist doesn't have a problem.
Right.
It's
right.
the rest of the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is so destructive to the other person. I think that's the key to this whole thing, is it's so destructive to the other person, the person who becomes the host.
Right.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It really, it's a constant, if you think about it, constant erosion of the self, of the other person.
Right.
And yeah. to the point that they lose themselves, they become exactly how the narcissist wants them to be right. in their right. world. So, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so heartbreaking when you're working with a person who is in one of those kinds of relationships, and they, because they will come in and they'll talk mm-hmm. about, you know, well, I do everything that they ask me to do, or that I do everything that's needed. I take care of everything, and it's never enough, or it's, you know, there's always more. There's always this, there's always that. And it's so,
there's another point here, Ella, that maybe we should touch on. Frequently people will come into our office and they'll say, and frequently it's a woman, or more frequently it's women. And they'll come and say, "My husband is a narcissist."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And because we all use these terms, you right. know, because when people use these terms like narcissist or hyperactive or depressed,
OCD.
they don't really mean it in a clinical sense.
Right.
They mean it as a characterological sense. And so they will come into the office and say, "Well, I think my husband is a narcissist." We have to be very careful. What would you advise? How would you know whether the woman is talking about a true narcissist or just somebody who is self-centered?
It's great that you asked this, because I just wrote a note that said that we should go off script just a little bit and talk about how someone could tell if they were really in a relationship with a narcissist.
How would you really know?
Yeah.
How would you know that you're really living with a narcissist versus somebody who just takes care of himself, mm-hmm. just is selfish?
I think it's a fine line. And I think because now everybody is, they are in a relationship or they meet someone. And the first thing that comes to mind, oh, he's narcissist or she's narcissist. And it's a fine line. And it could be just the person that perhaps maybe they're having a bad day. They're having, there's something in their lives that they are not, you know, projecting themselves in a positive light. Mm-hmm. Narcissists, I think what they call red flags. First thing is that they're very, very, very charming, extremely charming. I mean, to the point that you feel like, wow, it's good to be true. It's too good to be true. And when it comes to relationships, people have to understand that, we're all different personalities. What I like will differ from what you like. And so they have to really not use that label so loosely. Mm-hmm. And it will differ from person to person. And what that, perhaps that woman, what she saw in him, I mean, what exactly it is, that's why it's a very sticky topic. It's really hard to pinpoint because it's different from person to person.
Right,
but
absolutely.
But I think you touched on it there. The person who's selfish may not be exceedingly charming.
Right.
You know, the person who's selfish, I have friends. I had a friend one time, and he was running. He was preparing for a marathon. And he would run 10 miles in the morning, mm-hmm. and then he'd run 10 miles in the afternoon. Well, that absorbed his whole life.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of time.
Yeah, I mean, just the amount of time that you have to, or people who say, you know, they go golfing on Saturdays, or they go out with their friend, you know, the wife is at home with the kids, and he's out golfing and everything. He's selfish,
right?
But not a narcissist, because he's not being exceedingly charming, and he's really not extracting that. He's really not taking the self out of his partner.
Right.
And I think maybe that's the line that you cross is when somebody begins to take yourself.
Right.
I think that's when you've crossed the line maybe into pathology.
Right. Yeah, I think that I think this goes back to what you guys were talking about a few minutes ago with the vampirism, you know, that one of the cues should be whether it's narcissism or anything else. If you're in a relationship with somebody or you have an interaction with somebody and afterwards you feel completely drained,
right?
There's some indication that person is pulling something from you, whether it's just life, life energy or yourself, your identity, you know, that I think is one potential indicator that, there's something going on here.
Would you agree, Al, that this relationship started with me feeling energized? And now I'm feeling exhausted.
Exactly. They're very, very draining to be in their presence, even for, even if you were not in a relationship, family member, a friend, when you are in their presence, you immediately feel something is, you feel like you're physically ill and you'd be thinking, you know, what's going on? That's one of the things that got me to actually research that, and I came across narcissism, is that they're very draining. They're so self-centered, mm-hmm. that they are, and they talk about themselves all the time, and the constant praise that they want from you, among other things, it's just so draining, absolutely, absolutely draining. Mm-hmm. And you get lost in their world so much that at the end of the day, you're like, okay, wow, what happened here?
Right, mm-hmm. right. Yeah, I think that leads into maybe another characteristic, another thing that you might recognize if you're in one of those kinds of relationships, and that is, you know, you're, when you're in a relationship and your needs become so marginalized right. because the other person's needs are so much more important.
Right.
And so when you, if you feel like, you know, if you sit back and you think, man, I haven't chosen the restaurant we go to in about 3 years. It's always right. the restaurant that he or she wants to go to, and I never get to choose. And so when you're, and in fact, they keep choosing the one that they know I hate. So that might be another thing is it, when your needs and interests and desires are marginalized for the sake of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think a third one maybe is another little note that I put is image. You know, one of the things you see sometimes too is that the what becomes very important to the person is when you're involved, anytime that the narcissist wants their partner or somebody else to be involved, they are very meticulous about how that other person presents. So it may be, you know, what you wear, what yeah. you're doing, you know, your yeah. actions and behaviors and, you know, don't say that or don't do this or, you know, I just want you to stand there and not say anything because the whole idea is you're there as an accessory to that person. Right. You're there to yeah. make that person look better.
Yeah, you're like you become an extension of them to the point that this is what happened. You know, yourself is eroded to the point to that point where you don't know, like they say, you don't know where they begin and you end. And individuality is not there. They don't see people as separate from them. They are. You know, their extension, their bandage, you know, so to speak. So yeah. yes, they are, they're very, I guess also that goes into they don't have boundaries. Mm-hmm. The boundaries, they don't believe in boundaries. What you have is theirs, whether yourself, what you own, everything. And it's very, 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 very horrible.
That's yeah. interesting you should say that, because the woman who was interviewed, the woman I was talking about earlier who needed therapy,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
one of the things that she said is she gave up her house because he said, well, we don't need to have two houses. So she gave up her house because of him. And then she realized that she had to leave the relationship and she had no place to go. She had no home to go to.
Yeah.
She had given up, literally given up everything.
Yeah.
Exactly. That goes back to also their need for control. I think that in order to control someone, you have to make sure that they become your whole world. You are no longer in control of yourself or what you have. And to emphasize, and this control is to take anything from you that might give you control of yourself or your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So so the short story is it's really difficult when you're in a relationship with somebody with some of these characteristics, because it's just consuming.
Right.
You are at risk for having so much of you, again, marginalized or just stripped right. and taken from you. So it's challenging. And
that's why you tell, you know, the best way from what I have experienced is that you, if you can, you cut ties with that kind of person, because they are, they're not there to, they don't see anything wrong with them, and they are kind of sort of making you into, you know, one of them. And that's not a way to live.
Absolutely. And it's so sad, because, you know, by the time, maybe with like your example, Richard, is that, you know, by the time, hopefully you recognize it early, but, you know, if you're not careful, by the time you recognize it, you have had so much taken from you that, okay, so now how do I leave?
That
I'm not sure how to leave.
They're rendered impotent and helpless, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. The egos. They're so ego diminished. They can't do anything.
Yeah.
But Alla, it's I have a 800-pound gorilla here sitting on our table.
What is that?
And you know what that is, don't you?
No, I'm kind of lost here.
I was going to say, it's okay to say no. Because,
all right. Well, you know, we've been talking about narcissism.
Okay.
Now right. You know what it is, don't you?
Right. Okay.
Just walk with me here for a moment.
Okay.
There's a great talk today, much talk today, even among professionals.
Oh, that gorilla.
That gorilla.
That gorilla.
There's, and we would be remiss, I think. We've been teasing the audience. We would be remiss if we didn't at least touch on it. There's much talk these days that our newly elected president is a narcissist. And although we are bound by our ethics not to make a diagnosis if it's not our patient.
Yeah.
Right. And
I do believe that. However, this person does have many of the traits that we do associate with narcissism. How do we know? Should we be worried? I think is the first question I have. Should we be worried if he is a narcissist, if he does have these tendencies, should we be worried?
Well,
I mean, I'm ready to divorce him, but I'm just an N of one. Should we be concerned? Is there enough evidence that we should be concerned?
Well, that will fall on if we talk. Wow, that's a heavy one.
He's not. He's not a vulnerable narcissist, right?
No, not by any means. He's not. And I don't. To tell you the truth, I've been really watching his interactions. I've been watching what he is saying. He's very, very extremely intelligent. That is apparent.
Right.
There's arrogance, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's right. Arrogance, confidence.
Confidence. I can say also there's a very, very a high level of assertiveness.
Yes.
Unlike what he showed, for example, before the elections. Which makes me think it was maybe there's some kind of intentional sort of thing of putting or revealing or making people see him in that light. It's because to tell the truth, politics is really it's a very, very sticky situation. It's you're there to please the people, so to speak, give them what they want to see. Right. So I'm not really quite sure, like you stated, because, it's like what he's showing is kind of alarming, but at the same time, we really don't know that person. We don't know him on a personal level. So
right.
It's hard, really.
And he's a good example. When you talked about confidence and arrogance, are we just seeing supreme arrogance and confidence, or are we seeing narcissism? And I think that's the difficult clinical decision that, which is it? Is this just arrogance and confidence?
Right.
Because he has every reason to be, or are we truly looking at a narcissist?
I think that there's something that Ella mentioned just a moment ago that I think I had not thought about before, but I think is really important. But first, I think that anyone who would even run to be the president of the United States has to have some of these characteristics.
Right.
I mean,
absolutely.
You have to make a set of decisions and, be in a position to where, those narcissistic tendencies have to be there no matter what, even to be a senator.
I think any candidate would be pretty high on that scale.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you mentioned, I think that is really important is that, in a lot of ways, he is saying exactly what many of his constituents want him to say.
Right.
You know, they sound very extreme to people who maybe have not consumed the Kool-Aid, but there are others who are, are right behind him with everything, and he's getting you know, he certainly gets a lot of feedback that what he's saying is the right thing to be saying, what he's doing is the right thing to be doing. And so, right. you know, in a lot of ways, perhaps he is tailoring his decisions to a particular group of people.
Right.
That group of people may be a relative minority, you know, compared to the rest of the rest of the population of the United States.
But that's what elected.
But it is who he's hearing nonetheless.
Right. That's right. That's who put him there.
Right. So it may not be necessarily narcissism. It may be significant confidence and even arrogance. Because I think that there is definitely some arrogance there with, you know, well, I, you know, when he says things like, you know, I know more about ISIS than anyone else.
Right.
Well,
that's arrogance.
Yeah, that's arrogance.
Narcissism.
You know, that tendency to say use those similar words mm-hmm. with so many different things. I think that's arrogance, but I think Alan may be right that much of what we're seeing is really just a tendency to do
the politician in him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's hard with, like Dr. Richards, what you said that, senators and also they can fall into that category as well. It's maybe it's the type of work, the type of environment that they are in. It's they have to be kind of sort of protect themselves in a way that they have to present that kind of persona to the outside world or even to the people around them.
Right.
Because it's not easy being a senator or even the president of the United States. It's something, it's huge. You have a whole country that is depending on you. And so some people would talk about, yeah, there are, he's showing traits, he's showing stuff, but it's not like, it has to be really used loosely here. Mm-hmm. Because it's not only him, there are presidents before him. That they also, if we want to, you know, they exhibited some of these traits as well. Absolutely. It comes with the job, I guess. I don't know.
It's a requirement.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, but it brings up one other issue, if I may. Most of what we discuss in psychiatry and psychology is a Western European philosophical tradition. Does narcissism... is narcissism the same in other cultures?
It's pretty much, yes.
Is it?
Actually, it is. It's
so it exists in all cultures.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Okay. It's the same thing. It's no difference. It's probably the language is different.
The prevalence, you know, may be
culture
different.
Is different, yes, but it's the same. It's the same.
Same
it's,
everywhere.
Yes, it's the same. Absolutely the same.
Yeah, yeah. I think that we're more at risk here to breed that to give because, you know, of course, some of the criteria are, you know, senses of entitlement, those kinds of things, and so we may be more likely to create an environment that fosters development of those traits, but
more than the Oriental cultures, which are more group oriented.
Right, yeah. Right.
So, right.
Well, great. No other elephants or gorillas or anything like
I only had one large elephant.
Okay.
But I couldn't help myself. I'm sorry. I had to ask you about that.
No, that's okay.
You gave a good answer. That was good. That was very thoughtful.
No, I mean, it's I try not to pass judgment, especially when it comes to, you know, when you really don't know the person, you have what they are presenting to you. I mean, I would love to meet him.
I agree. It would be interesting to sit and talk to him because when people meet him,
absolutely,
they find him very charming, very affable. He's a good listener. That's what everybody has said who has met him.
Dr. Richard,
go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt, but you said something really interesting here. He's a good listener, which actually narcissists are not. They usually don't really, if they may seem that they're listening to you, but they're not really listening. If you ask them, you know what I mean? So I'm not quite sure.
But I never knew whether he is you know that thing that narcissists do where they draw you into their life? You know, they act like you're really important.
Right.
And I've never known whether he's really listening and charming or whether that's part of that narcissist's
pulling you in.
Yeah, drawing you in. And you know, lulling you into this false sense of security.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I could retract that if I have to. No. The listening part. No, that's what everybody has said who's met him.
That's part of their charm. You feel like you are the most important thing in the world right now to them. Right. And that's part of their charm. So, yes, I can see that. I can see that actually in the beginning.
Right. But you're absolutely right. If you really don't know, you have to be very careful about making a diagnosis. Right. And that's why we have always stopped short here about talking about it, because we don't know him.
Right.
We don't know him well enough to make. You're not sure what it is you're dealing with because we don't know him well enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
So. Yeah, that was good.
All right.
Well, this has been fun. I might have to come to Texas and drive
Absolutely.
Through.
Absolutely. That would be awesome. That would be amazing.
Sometime I want to know how you ended up in Texas, how you got from Egypt to Texas. There's no connection there, Ella. There's none.
Well, it's I have friends. I have friends here.
Do you?
Yes, I have friends. And we've been corresponding online, and they invited me. And I was like, wow, okay. And I came, and I just fell in love with Texas. Tell you the truth, it's a very, very charming place.
Well, they're lucky to have you.
So, yes.
Thank you.
Congratulations to them.
Thank you.
It's been wonderful talking to you.
It absolutely is wonderful.
Same with you guys.
And I will include links to your website and to your Twitter, you know, handle in the show notes, so that if people want to follow, want to see what you're writing and talking about and putting out there.
If they want to know more about dragonflies.
Right.
Go.
They're my favorite insects.
That's what it looked like. Yeah. I said, Ella likes dragonflies.
That's right. That's right. Yes. Yeah. Your Twitter handle is at Ella Abden. And your blog is fieldsofdragonflies.blogspot.com. So again, I'll have the links in the show notes so people can follow and see what you're doing.
Well, doctors, it's been a really, really pleasure. It was really a privilege to meet you and talk with you.
It was our pleasure. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. And anytime you ever want to come back, just let us know. Send me an email and we'll have you back on and we'll talk about something else.
Yeah, or if you have additional thoughts and you just want to talk about those, you know, you think about it and say, well, I wished I would have done this and that and said this and that. Man, come back on. We'd be happy to talk to you. Okay?
Sure.
You can even bring your friends. We want to meet your friends too. Okay?
Okay. All right.
Sounds great. So that's it for today. So until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.